Well, good morning, 617. It's about 57 degrees, and it looks like we could have some more rain in our forecast. Speaking of which, there's an incredible amount of rain that has come down in Carolina. It's just staggering the amount of water that they've gotten over there. Now, why Carolina as opposed to the rest of the East Coast? It's just sheer blind luck or an act of God, however you want to describe it. But you know, some of these places are just epically affected by this rain. And it's just the way this storm was going up. Then they thought it was like all of these storms. They track the storm. They think it's going one way and then it goes another. But it is some of these places are between 25 and 30 inches of rain. So it just is kind of nothing short of amazing. And so they're talking about a once in a lifetime once in a thousand year flood. Now, I'll have to forget what the Weather Channel here and move on to AccuWeather, but they're asking what led to the flooding that is just dogging these people, and they're entire towns that are underwater. And you've got, I was telling you, the left lower portion of a hurricane is a lot stronger than the right side. So that's the part that they got. And it's saying that a chief meteorologist, Elliot Abrams, who I thought worked for Ronald Reagan, but he says, "I've never seen rainfall this intense in this large of an area and during this short of a period in absence of direct impact from a tropical storm or hurricane." Think about that. This guy's livelihood is made from studying this stuff. And from 1 to 2 feet of rain has fallen over a broad area in the Carolinas over a span of 3 to 4 days. Very unusual combination of weather factors came together at just the right way to set it up. And so there was initially a band of clouds that had come up and was kind of stalled over the East Coast. And that was the first part of it. A non-tropical storm in the south, a strong area of high pressure in Canada, and converging tropical moisture from Hurricane Joaquin coming together. And there was a front that reversed direction, so that's what helped it stall. And then the impact of Joaquin was indirect. And so anyway, it just seemed to wring all of the moisture out of those storms. And but I mean, just can you imagine 30 inches of rain? I mean, that's just I mean, if it happened here, we'd just be washed, you know, I'm sure washed in the Rio Grande. So anyway, that's just one of those things. Now, the a little bit more on the ship, I mean, I think it's just a given that ship went down. There are no survivors. How would you survive if you're clinging to a lifeboat in a 130-mile-an-hour storm, and if you've got you know, 50 maybe 60 70 foot seas, and you know the wave is the way that waves are measured, they're actually much bigger than the official listed because of the way that they measure these things. So anyway, you're in a situation in the ocean where it's probably completely just unsurvivable. And I don't know, it's absolutely amazing. I've got a little clip here from CNN, but you know, I simply cannot imagine a captain who would cared about his crew trying to survive a Category 4 hurricane on purpose sailing into it.
We are assuming that the vessel has sank. We believe it sank in the last known position that we recorded on Thursday. So what that means, though, We just change our search planning efforts. We are still looking for survivors or any signs of life, any signs of that vessel. We are still doing that. So the search for survivors continues. Yesterday, because of those favorable search conditions, we were able to see a lot of material that was at sea, a lot of things that came from a container ship of that size. So we know we recovered the El Faro's life ring. We also recovered a lifeboat that had the markings of El Faro on it. It was heavily damaged, but it was recovered. No signs of life there. As we went through the day yesterday, we had multiple reports of immersion suits, survival suits that were floating in the water, life rafts, and life boats. We had to check each one. We did that methodically because we wanted to make sure there were no signs of life. They were hoping to find a survivor, so we needed to check every one. In one of the survival suits, we did identify human remains in one of the survival suits. We lowered a rescue swimmer to confirm that the person was deceased and it was basically unidentifiable. We needed to move from there quickly because there were other reports of survival suits as well as lifeboats and life rafts. And we checked those methodically through the day. No other signs of life at this time. So as I mentioned, we are not looking for the vessel any longer. However, today we are still out there searching. We've modified our search efforts to focus more on potential people in the water, lifeboats, and life rafts.
All right. So, in any event, I just can't imagine. I mean, it's scary. For me, it was scary to be out on the ocean, and it's not really a place that I wanted to spend my life, but it was an experience. But, and that was in relatively calm weather. I was up in Alaska, but, anyway, I've got a little clip here from Nikki Haley on Carolina, South Carolina.
This is dangerous. This is very real.
A weekend of record rainfall has wreaked havoc on South Carolina. Some parts of the state were hit with 25 inches of rain. Governor Nikki Haley says they're starting to transition from response mode to assessment, but they're not quite out of the woods yet.
I can't stress enough that this is not a fun event. We don't want to have to come out and rescue, and much worse, we don't want to have you added to this number of fatalities.
Officials are calling this a 1-in-1,000 year rainfall. Even as the precipitation begins to taper off, the flooding rages on. 550 roads and bridges are closed as hundreds of National Guardsmen and 19 air and water rescue teams scramble to pull residents from the rising waters. The waters that officials warn are on the move.
What you will see happen is as the water shifts down, we're going to pre-position where the roads are closed. So roads are closed now in the upstate. You're going to start to see road closures down from the Midlands down to the low country.
State officials continue to urge residents to stay home and stay off the roads.
We're telling them to stay home right now. None of the restaurants are open. Most of the grocery stores are closed. They need to just stay off the road.
Governor Haley says it could take days for roads in the hardest hit areas of the state to become accessible.
All right, so, and I'm sure that you've seen some of the pictures, towns that are just underwater, not just water flooding through them, but just sitting water, and the water is all the way up to the signs on the road. So you're talking about 5, 8 feet, 10 feet of water. It's just astounding. All right, so some of your headlines. Fastest growing language in the United States is not Spanish, it is Arabic. There is a record 63 million non-English speaking residents in America. Isn't that amazing? Whatever happened to this idea that we were a melting pot and everybody would work as hard as they could to assimilate, learn English, move into American culture? It seems to me the only way we can make this work, E Pluribus Unum, is one of our mottos here, out of many come one. Whatever happened to that idea? So the Oregon shooter puts his manifesto out there. He was upset about not having a girlfriend. Was he on psychiatric meds? Was he seeing a psychiatrist like all of these other shooters are? The sheriff writes that gun control is not the answer. Residents agree. So there was an article that I saw that was kind of interesting. And what it stated was that the problem out there is not the guns. It's the gun-free zones, because that's where these people head. They head into areas where, I mean, they're cowards. They're people who want a gun in their hand and they don't want anybody else to be able to defend themselves. And I'm always curious why, you know, a situation, everybody lie down or this or that, you know, and the gunman just starts picking people off. Why there aren't more situations where the shooter is bum rushed by the people in the crowd. I mean, you obviously the chances of you know, 5 or 10 people rushing this person and everybody getting shot or zero. Of course, it would take a lot of guts. But anyway, these people want to be in a situation where they are in total control. They're the only one who has a weapon. And so what this guy did is he told everybody to lie down in this room. And then would tell people to stand up and ask him, what's your faith? And the person would say, well, you know, whatever. Somebody said they're a Christian, he'd shoot him in the head. If the person said they were something else, he'd shoot him in the leg. So that had been a situation where somebody in the audience had a gun. That person, I'm certain, would have pulled the gun out at some point. And, you know, you can't watch everybody at once. A room full of people would have started pulling off shots on the guy, you know. So I think that the answer to these things is to allow people to have their guns. Because if this guy thought, you know, would he go to a military, you know, would he go to a convention where there's a bunch of military or police people who are armed and try to pull that crap? No, of course not. So the answer isn't getting rid of all guns, because you could never do that in America anyway. There's too many guns out there. It is to allow less areas or no areas where there's gun-free zones. I mean, that is obviously the illusion of safety. You have a security guard on this campus, doesn't have a gun, so he can't do anything when stuff gets real bad. And you've also got a whole room full of people that are guaranteed not to have any weapons, and so you just pick them off. And then, you know, this guy thought he was going to become a hero. Well, I guess he probably will be a hero to other sickos like him. But in any event, the president is getting roasted for turning this into a political event, 523-1450, and that he called for it to be a political event. So it's just more knee-jerk leftism as a response. 6:30. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180. I have the text machine here, and we're going to have Walt in a half an hour.
I will never be set free, long as I have a ghost that you can't see.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, how you doing? This is Tony.
Kelly.
I know you're on break, but I just wanted to talk to you while you're... Yeah, I got cut off. I got cut off somehow.
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. What's up, Sergio? Or who is it?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, real quick, the people that want to have put, you know, institute gun laws are the very same elites that either can carry or are protected.
Definitely.
And that's...
Hey.
Let me
put you on hold, and we'll bring the comments on the air, okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
KOBE.
It's 6:34, and we have a caller. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Sergio, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning, Sergio. And you wanted to agree that these gun-free zones are absolutely crazy.
They are, because I was listening to your comments, and you're absolutely right. These people have a power trip about them. Now, you know, to your listeners who are adamant about gun laws and restrictions, look, I'm going to say to them, they don't have to carry a gun, but don't deprive me or anyone else to have the ability to defend myself, because the people that are trying to get these gun laws in the legislation, that all these politicians, like I said before to you, they are the people that are elite, and they can either carry a gun or have protection from people who have weapons.
That's exactly right, and I think it's like a lot of leftist ideas. It's fantasy land. They want to impose their ideas. They don't want any religion to come in and take away their freedom, but their freedom of opinion or whatever action, but they take away everybody else's freedom with gun-free laws.
Exactly. You know, and some of these people who say, well, we need more gun control. I'm going to say something that I pondered. These poor people that have been killed like that, these people that want gun laws, have probably never imagined the torment and the torture, you know, the very fact that they know they're going to die. These people say, well, we need more gun laws. What about the people who are shot, begging for their lives, you know? I mean, this is ridiculous, these leftists, you know? They must be insane.
Well, and I was just thinking about this. It's so often that leftist ideas fail, and it doesn't seem to slow down the people on the far left. These are far left people. These are not the Democrats of Dona Ana for the most part. But there's a lot of conservative Democrats in this town, and we need to be thankful for them. But these people on the far left, it doesn't matter. Success, it does not play into their calculation. The normal person tries something and it doesn't work, they shrug and move on to something else. These people are more invested in their beliefs than any religious person.
True. I mean, I actually heard, this was a long while back, it happened, I think, somewhere in Houston or in Dallas. They had people in a bar, and a guy came in with a shotgun to rob everybody. And the next thing he knew, he was overwhelmed because people were pulling out guns. Now, you're not supposed to come in a bar, but, you know, the point is, this guy goes in there thinking that there's nobody armed or they're going to go by the law by not carrying a weapon inside a bar. This guy pulls a shotgun on him, and he was overwhelmed with people pulling out guns, pointing at him. He dropped his weapon. He dropped the shotgun. I mean, if nobody had weapons in there, what kind of a massacre could have taken place? You see my point?
I absolutely see your point, and I just was, you know, thinking to myself the other day, I think that the people on the far left want to distinguish themselves and separate themselves from everybody else to prove how smart they are. So they come up with ideas that go against common sense and that might be destined for failure, just to try to show people, other people, how smart they are, you know, because a super smart person has a genius idea. They always have a light bulb over their head, you know?
Right, right. And I'm getting to the point where I believe that some of these psychotic leftists, you know, believe they're avenging angels. They're going to be the savior of the world, save mankind, and their way is the only way. And they're just, it's really getting ridiculous. The PC and all this stuff is getting way out of hand.
Fake religion. The people,
it is.
They believe in it so much because it's got a religious fervor to it. It is presents itself as the ultimate reality, but it is a total failure. And it's like they can't pick up the pieces. It just seems like they're incapable of drawing the conclusion that they're wrong, you know, admitting it and, like, you know, kind of becoming a better person.
Right, exactly. Well, let me just say one more thing.
Hurry up.
Now, these people believe that gun control or outlawing guns is going to work. That's going to be a dismal failure because, you know, this country is getting such an influx and massive amounts of drugs that we cannot stop. And now the cartels or whoever would start selling us guns on the black market, making them even more rich, you know. So if they can't stop the drugs, if these leftists can't stop the drugs that's killing the kids, then they're not going to stop the guns coming in from another country.
That's probably true. Thanks for the call, Sergio. All right, folks. I've got a little bit of controversy on the NFL, but let's take a little break first. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180. Don't let those sneaky leftists come in and steal all your rights. Let's stand up. Let's take a stand. I just heard the Nathan Please Don't Call Me Tiny Small talking about something similar on that little local clip we had. So power to the people, huh? We'll be right back.
If I could read your mind, love, what tell your thoughts could tell? Just like a paperback novel, the kind of close to the cell.
Well, we've got a game last night between the Seahawks and the Lions, and there was, towards the end of the game, a fumble. I think it was towards the end of the game. I didn't watch the game. I tried to get some sleep. But the fumble by the man, I'm just watching. All right. So Calvin Johnson, who's maybe one of the best, maybe the best wide receivers in the NFL, tall and fast, coming up for a touchdown, he's tackled, and then Cam Chancellor, the guy that was holding out for money for being a leader, who gave up on that idea after losing several million dollars, knocks the ball out of his hand. Now, the ball's in the end zone. Somebody else comes up and bats it out of the end zone on the Seahawks. Seemingly a smart play, but illegal, and the Detroit Lions should have got the ball back, that's just all there is to it. So there's just a lot of complaints I'm hearing these days about officiating in the NFL and in the also in NCAA, college football. And the NFL vice president of officiating, Dean Blandino, sounds like an exciting guy, explained that the refs had missed the call. So anyway, in these days of instant replay, it seems like in these plays that are not reviewable, I think they should be reviewable, I guess. I mean, people are getting, you know, very upset about it. So, all right. Now then, are Islamic State terrorists sneaking into the West? That's an article in the LA Times. It's not coming out of the Judicial Watch or anything like that, like some of these other stories were. Let me get on to that in just a minute. But all right, so what do you think about what's going on in the West, or the Syrian war, this war in Syria that arguably could have been avoided, or supposedly could have been avoided, if America had kept the line in the sand. If there are countries that are involved in there, and that one of the countries happens to be the USSR, Vladimir Putin sends his jets down there to bomb ISIS and to support Assad, who's been a long time ally of Russia's, then they gain preeminence, they gain favor. But my real question is, if we know ISIS is down there and trying to build their super Islamic state, and they're going around killing people, and you know the president has said that we're doing everything that we can, which is a statement I don't even know what it means. I mean, everything we can. Obviously, we're not throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at these guys. So there's a reason. So I think what the president is saying, you know, because the president is a stubborn guy, we're putting everything into the fight that I'm prepared to do, because I can't go farther than that. I think that would be an appropriate interpretation of what he's saying. But as time goes by, as America loses chances to be involved in these types of situations that we arguably were already involved with from the beginning, what is it costing us in terms of influence around the world? Now, the president might have this theory of the world in which a less powerful, less influential America is better for A, B, or C reason. A conclusion that he may have drawn long ago and decided if he got into the presidency or when he ran for the presidency, that would be his goal. If that is his goal, if that is his standard, I think it's very foolish because of situations like this, situations where we could do good. Now, you can do a libertarian move like Rand Paul would like, which seems to agree with the founding fathers, although this was a different world, of course. We were a tiny country. We were barely making it. We established ourselves somehow, and we decided we didn't want to get drawn into foreign wars because there were all of these huge and expensive and long-lasting wars in Europe that seemed to completely deplete the countries that they were involved with without it giving anything positive. And we're not in those days anymore. But should we withdraw and be isolationist? If not, then we have to choose the conflicts that we're in. If we were isolationist, we wouldn't have been in World War I or World War II. We'd probably be speaking German now. You know, so if there is an argument to be made for being involved in the world, we have to do it sagaciously or wisely. And I think the way that the president kind of mouses around and shows up but doesn't really get completely engaged, that might suit his personality. But I really don't think it suits us. If we're going to be involved in the world, let's make the most of it, you know, and calling ISIS a JV team and then watching as it kills and rapes and murders all of these people across the Middle East, many of them just because they're Christians. The president claims that he's a Christian. The president seems to value, according to Vladimir Putin, being cool more than any other quality. But how is that working out for us? It's not high school anymore. You know, being cool isn't the ultimate state of being. It's being engaged and committed, in my opinion, and to pursue our world goals, which are democracy in these various countries. And if we can't have democracy, at least have, and in liberty and freedom, at least have a working relationship with countries that benefit us. There's nothing wrong with doing things that benefit America, and that's his job. 6:49 a.m. Los Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We're going to have Walton here in just a minute, but I'm going to get into this ISIS on the border situation again, or at least ISIS coming into the West. And it is a scary idea. The name of the article is this from the LA Times. Op-ed, are Islamic State terrorists sneaking into the West? Okay, so it's talking about the vast numbers of refugees that are coming from Syria into the rest of the West, or from Syria, from the Middle East and the West. And it says that almost 1 million refugees are moving into Germany. Now, some nations are accepting them, like Germany. Other nations, such as Hungary and Slovakia, have decided that they don't want these refugees because they don't fit in with the country's demographic. Now, we live in a time when most people tend to think with politically correct values of all-inclusiveness and either non-religiously, in other words, religion doesn't matter, this universal claim that all religions teach the same thing, which obviously they don't. So, or you wouldn't have one group of people just warring across the world and killing people out of all of the religions out there. One group seems to be relentlessly involved in murder. And this is not to say that all of the people in those religions are murderers. The vast majority of them are peaceful, peace-loving people. But the ones that are not are terrifying. So, in any event, so Lebanon's education minister, Elias Boussab, recently stated that 2 in every 100 Syrian migrants arriving in Europe are Islamic State fighters sent to infiltrate a continent is not thinking about these things. If these conservative calculations are accurate, that means among the 10,000 Syrian refugees that the Secretary of State, John F. Kerry, has pledged to allow in the United States next year, there would be 200 committed terrorists. Now, Europe is already struggling with radical attacks, Muslim attacks. Now, you've got, you know, Muslims attacking European, you know, British, blowing up trains or buses in Britain, launching attacks in France in which they went in and just shot up an entire magazine staff and basically killed just about everybody. You have attacks going on that you're not even aware of because they've become so common. Oftentimes Jews being picked out and executed, but all across Europe, in the midst of this, Europe is welcoming in millions and millions of Syrians and other Muslims. As we do the same thing, there's no doubt that we're bringing in committed ISIS fighters. So that leaves the question, what are these people going to do when they get here? Because it's a absolute certainty that given the nature of the leadership that we have right now, they act like we have no choice but to do this. So to save 10,000 people, we're going to bring in 200 ISIS fighters. What are they going to do? When they get here, they're not going to be playing pinochle, you know, and, you know, walking down to get an ice cream cone. They're going to be planning violent attacks against us. Why do they attack the countries in Europe? Why did they attack the trade towers? I wrote an article about this. I got this published a long time ago in Small Wars Journal, Economic Terrorism. They're not only opposed to our in some abstract sense the freedom that we have here. They're opposed to our economic freedom as well. I mean, these people are Sharia-minded people are opposed to us across the board, and it doesn't matter how many good things we do for them, how much a Christian charity we offer, it doesn't really matter because they're totally opposed to us at our essence. So we're going to be bringing in 200 terrorists. What are these people going to get up to? And it's a shame that the GOP that has been elected to run the Senate and the House are so ineffective. Now, a Texas top cop, ISIS may be infiltrating the border. Director of Texas Department of Public Safety says individuals have been captured from countries known to have a terrorism presence. That's Steve McCraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, which includes Texas Highway Patrol and state troopers. And he warned at an annual Texas Border Coalition meeting that we're still vulnerable on the border. And individuals that come across the Texas-Mexican border from countries with a known terrorism presence, it's already happening. We have individuals that we've needed to debrief in languages spoken only in Afghanistan. And so anyway, the question, folks, is not if, it's when. When are we going to have an attack against America from people who have moved here, have settled here, and are we not just being horrifically foolish to not make any plans for that? Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 6:59. I appreciate listening in the first hour. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180 to text, and we'll have Walt Rubel in here in a few minutes.
You won't read the book again because the ending just too hard to take. Thank you.
who gets burned in a freeway split. Enter number two, a movie queen to play the scene of breaking on.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, this is Paul. Just a quick comment. You know, they're going to use these Sirius to justify more surveillance on Americans.
Wow. Well,
that's just what I think.
That's probably true.
Anyway, I got to go. Have a good day.
Thanks, Paul.
Fireman. Yeah. No, he's nice. He's real smart. Sounded good.
Anybody would know, you would know.
I mean, to me, if you had a obviously, get into it a little bit. What was there a forum last night for the mayors? Gina. She seems nice, but I asked her
what. Oh, good morning, 7:06, and have Walt Rubel in, just having a laugh off the air. I won't go into the details, but he came up with a pretty funny comment. But in any event, good morning, Walt.
Yeah, good morning.
How's it going?
Good. Just talking. It's starting to feel a little bit like fall. I kind of like it this time of year.
Yeah, you got a little thin shirt on.
Well, it'll warm up. I'm confident of that.
No doubt about it. All right. So, amongst other things, you were doing some research into the electric situation.
Yeah, utility regulation. I mean, let's get the listeners going early in the morning.
Exactly.
I'm working on a story trying to explain this whole solar energy piece to El Paso Electric's rate hike proposal and why they want to break those folks out and make them into a different class of customers than just regular old residents. And it gets into, to even start with that, you have to get into this arcane way that we sell energy, I guess, through the whole country. I mean, I thought it was just us, but Sandy Jones, who is in the PRC, said, no, they do that this way everywhere. Everything else we buy in life is the profit is made the same way. The company either produces it or buys it wholesale for, say, a dollar and then sells it to us for $1.50.
You know, sure.
That's not how it works with energy.
How does it work?
Well, the energy is supposed to, no matter what El Paso Electric pays for it, they're supposed to give it to us for the exact same price. And so that's a big part of what the PRC does, is making sure that as prices go up and down, I mean, obviously, they can't adjust for that. Every time your bill comes out, they're making adjustments up or down because it's never exactly right.
So does that mean it's a nonprofit?
No. All of their profit comes from investment. So they have four new plants, and that's what the fight is about. They just built four new power plants that they went to the PRC, and Steve Fishman, who's opposing this, had a column this Sunday pointing out that when they sold these to the PRC, they were projected to run for 3,500 hours a year. They are now running 150 hours a year. So now El Paso Electric.
What?
Yes, those are the numbers from Fishman, and they didn't dispute that. I mean, I talked to.
Why? What happened?
Well, their growth projections were wrong. And their other argument is that we need this for the peak hours. That, yes, we may only run these plants for 1 week a year for the hottest days in the summer and the, you know, but if we don't have them and you have blackouts, you know, that would be even worse. And so that's why people are willing to pay a little bit more on their monthly bills to make this investment, to make sure that doesn't happen. And so that's basically what the argument's going to be about on this rate case. The solar part of it gets down to what cost of delivery. And I know we're getting way into the weeds, but
it's all right. It's all right. I mean, if people can understand where the profit comes from, maybe it will make them see their bill a little bit differently.
Well, and that's another good point, because if you try to read through your bill, as a lot of people have done, but it's very dense and it's not very intuitive exactly what each charge specifically goes for. And that's a whole other point.
And they don't try to make it clear.
They absolutely do not. That's right. So at any rate, the solar part, what Shockley told me is his ideal company would be a business that goes 24/7, you know, churning out the exact same amount of energy or using, I mean, the exact same amount every day. So he can pencil that onto the books. He knows exactly what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
The further you get away from that, the higher his expenses are. There's more unpredictability.
Of course.
And his argument is you don't get any farther away from that than if you have your own solar panels on the roof, because there are some months where you're not using anything at all, but they still have a cost of maintaining your service. And so that's basically...
What does that mean?
Well, you still have a meter that needs to be read. You still have lines that need to be maintained, that you still have... Anytime you flip the switch and you've used up all yours, theirs has to be ready to go immediately. And there are costs
well,
to maintain
it. All right, so one of the big issues in electricity is that the sources, especially of natural energy, are variable, like the wind and the sun and everything,
right.
Everyone. But the main thing is you cannot store electricity.
That's the whole thing, the battery power. I mean, once we get that technology, then I think those become a lot more viable and a lot more. And that's the other thing a lot of people don't understand is they think people with solar panels are off the grid, and very few of them are. I mean, you.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's right.
How do you, I mean, if you had somebody on life support in your house,
yeah,
you wouldn't be off the
couldn't
grid.
Couldn't do it. Yeah. No, yeah. But no. My friends in Wyoming fantasize about, we have a plot of land in South Dakota, and we won't be off the grid. I mean, we will absolutely be on the energy grid.
Are they far right or far left or what?
They're
I'm just curious. I mean,
they are far right on the country's all going down the tubes, and we got to be ready to shoot it out at any moment. Yeah.
So they're far right on the conspiracy and the Second Amendment. What are they far left on?
Well, not just the Second Amendment. I mean, the whole mentality that not necessarily politically, but maybe cosmically, but for some reason that, you know, in our lifetime, there will be some kind of cataclysmic event that we will have to bunker down.
Are they religious at all, or is this secular apocalypticism?
Yeah, it's the latter.
Okay, we got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, good morning to you. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning, Kelly. Hey, what's upsetting to me with the Pathway Electric Company is they want to treat the people that have photovoltaic systems, solar systems on the roof of their house as though they're costing them money, when in fact we have saved the electric company from having to build infrastructure and increase their capacity for basically nothing. And I hope that the regulators realize that and don't allow these scumbags to get away with ripping us off.
Pedro, how much solar electricity do you produce yourself?
Well, I have a 20 panel system, and my electric bills run me about $30 a month in the summer.
That's not bad. Do you also bring in light for your marijuana, your medicinal marijuana garden, through that?
Well, I don't go there. I'm not a doper.
All right. Well, Walt.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I would say is to them that's not saving money, because as we talked, they want to make that investment, and so
that's the only way they can make money.
There is. Go ahead.
I'm sorry about that. They want to make that investment because they can write it off on their taxes.
Well, no. You help them a little bit because, and this gets even more complicated, but in New Mexico, there is a requirement that a certain percentage of their portfolio has to be solar. And so if they're able to buy that from customers, that does save them money on that end of it. So there's some truth to that. But the point about saving them for not having to build new plants, but my whole point is they want to build new plants. That's how they make all their money, is by building new plants.
That's right. And so we're affecting them in what they perceive to be negatively, but we're not. If there's 10,000 homes that have solar, 5,000 of them, out of 20,000 homes, 10,000 have solar, where the electric company would have had to build a power facility X size with those 10,000 homes producing power, they don't need to bake
Pedro,
that.
Pedro, there is one issue that's out there that I've heard about, and if you have a comment on it, that supposedly this green power is an illusion because the government comes in as an investor at some level and artificially lowers the cost of putting these panels in, and then the electric company doesn't like it because they have to pay more than the electricity is worth. What do you think about all that?
It's a bunch of hogwash. The customer has paid for these power lines, power plants, years ago. Over time, all of this stuff has paid for itself, and they've got a monopoly on the system, and they've had it for a long time, and they're making tons of money.
Yeah, no arguing with any of that. All of that's true.
So, ultimately, green power is good for America? I mean, the solar cells, are those good? Or, I mean, are they
have to be. I mean, the individual rooftop, how can that not be a good thing?
I don't
know. I mean, it just seems like an obvious thing to me.
But I mean, you know, you do have to throw a little analysis on it.
Well, you're either doing that or you're getting it from gas or coal. I mean, it just seems obvious that if there was a greater investment individually on each individual house, that we could drastically reduce the amount of gas and coal we need.
Well, I'm not worried about that aspect of it. I'm worried about the sun shines here like it does almost nowhere else. And anybody that doesn't participate in that is just throwing money away.
Yeah.
All right, Pedro, thanks for the call. Comments? I mean, I guess, all right, so the people on the...
He laid out the argument on the other side very well. And what El Paso Electric will say, okay, maybe all of that's true, but you being the PRC, approved these plans. We told you what we thought our growth rate was going to be. Yes, our projections were wrong, but you approved those projections. You can't come back now after we built it and say we can't recoup our investment. That's what the argument's going to be.
Well, that's a contractual argument that we made an agreement. You have to stick to it. But
yeah.
I'm saying when you look intuitively and you see the panels, and then you say these have to be a good thing, the people on the right are skeptical of government. They're skeptical of what they're being sold. And they see hidden costs that are covered by the government, and they're not necessarily happy with that. What people want to know is, ultimately, is the green economy or the green electric economy, is it a boondoggle or is it a true growth area?
You know, I think a good idea is a good idea. The city putting solar panels on its parking garage is a good idea. I mean, the Sun News putting solar panels on our parking shade was a good idea.
Living up to your name.
Well, I mean, the point is, the caller is right. I mean, we have an abundance of this resource in this town. And so taking advantage of it, whether it's the government doing it or a private person doing it, I think is a good idea. And I don't see anything wrong with the government incentivizing that in some way, because I do think it will have a net result of reducing energy that is produced in other dirtier ways.
So I will repeat my question that a lot of people are wondering about. People don't want to be driven into a boondoggle in the name of the environment or whatever. I know you're very passionate about this, but they want to be able to feel like they are they want a capitalist development. They don't want something that's whether this is fair or not, I'm not advocating
right.
for it. I'm just expressing, I think, the opinion of a lot of people.
But that's assuming that's making a lot of false assumptions, starting with the fact that there are incredible tax incentives going to oil companies.
That may be true.
So if the argument is we can't have tax incentives in solar and wind because that would be tilting the playing field and unfair, well, let's get rid of all tax incentives then, not just on one side. But I wouldn't even do that. I think, like I said, if you're a person my age or older who owns a house,
wheelchair with panels on the back?
Well, my point is there are a lot of people who that investment may not make sense when they look at how much longer do I realistically have, to stay in this house. It still may make sense in the long run. For the community, the more people who do that, you understand what I'm saying. So
absolutely.
So to incentivize that, go ahead.
Allow me to just say one thing. I'd just like to hear the analysis. That's kind of what interests me. I'm not trying to bang the drum for it's an idea from the right, therefore it's true, therefore anything that's said by the left is a bunch of nonsense. That's not what I'm standing for at all. I just want to hear the analysis. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
Hi, this is Ted. I just wanted to ask why haven't we had a larger now I know that there are large scale solar arrays out by Deming and down by Sunland Park, but it just seems so nonsensical for somebody to be stomping around on the roof, drilling holes in my roof, and my panels reflecting the sun into my neighbor's eye when we've got all this space in between here and Deming.
No wonder they have cataracts next door. All right. So, Walt.
Well, it's self-contained is the argument that you want each of these individually. If it's in Deming, it requires a power line, and that you want it as close to the source as possible.
I finally understand where Walt's coming from. It is the vision of the yeoman farmer. It's the idea that the founding fathers had. Mount Vernon would have had tens of thousands, or at least probably thousands of photovoltaic cells collecting sun if these were around for Jefferson.
I no doubt.
All right, Ted.
Well, that's fine, but still, the thing is when my little system of my roof goes down, I've got to call an electrician or call some private company. It just seems like that there'd be an economy of scale.
I like that.
Somewhere else.
What happens with the Macho Springs and all that energy, I believe, goes to California and Arizona. I mean, the great big arrays that you're talking about typically don't stay in New Mexico, I don't think.
We've got to take baby steps here, Ted.
Well, and the power that we save in the form of petroleum gets shipped off somewhere on a tanker in the form of finished products. Currently, I understand we have a ban on crude oil, but finished products get shipped off somewhere else to burn.
All right, thanks for the call, Ted. Folks, we are way behind on these beautiful ads that help support the program, but. Yeah, Walter, we're stirring the pot on. I didn't know there'd be so many happy calls about getting free energy from the sun. 722, 723 on the button. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450, 805, 6180. We'll be right back with the ever charming Walt Rubel. All right, so I'm here with Walt and we're talking about, well, we were talking off the air a little bit about science, but so we've got about half the show left. Why don't we dig into a little bit of local politics?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, obviously the mayor's race and three council races that we're about ready to dig into. We have our first interview today in the council district one race and preparing for a debate in the mayor's election at the same time. And really looking forward to that. We're going to
do that with KRWG-TV, and they're going to, I think, replay it three times during the week, so people get a lot of chances to see it. Mm-hmm. And I just enjoy debates. I think the formality of it, I like the opportunity to ask, you know, very pointed questions, and you don't get to ramble. You get either 60 seconds or a 30-second rebuttal, and, you know, you've got to be sharp. You've got to be on point. And
what did you think of the way that Fox did their debate, where it seemed to be that the candidates were allowed to kind of argue amongst themselves?
You know, I think it's so different when you have that many candidates that it's just hard to relate it to anything that, you know, you've seen in the past that classifies as a traditional debate, which one-on-one is obviously the best, because then you have, that's when you have the classic moments, the, you know, I knew Jack Kennedy, you know, Jack Kennedy, that kind of thing.
Classic insults.
Well, yeah, or Reagan, there you go again. And I mean, there are moments from those kinds of debates that stick with you. When you get 12 or 14 people, it's, you know, I think a lot of it's manufactured, what Fox News did. Obviously, they wanted Carly Fiorina and Donald Trump to square off. They had the rule intentionally that if you mention anybody's name, they get to come back. Well, that's designed to try to stir that up, to try to get people to square off.
But, I mean, that's great, isn't it?
For TV, it is.
But, I mean, isn't it great for debate?
You know, to an extent, it is. I mean, The problem with that is that you do allow the candidates to sort of set the agenda. Just by naming somebody else, they can go into an area that maybe you didn't want to as the moderator or the panelist. So you do lose a little bit of control of it that way. And the other thing about their debate is they went for 3 hours, I think, which is ridiculous.
A three-hour tour at work for Gilligan.
Well, I mean, ours is 1 hour, so we feel like we want to touch on a lot of things and we got to get in and out. They had time to ramble because they had a 3 hour debate.
Okay, so what to you are the most pressing issues? If you had a chance to have a one-on-one conversation with a candidate, what would be the most pressing issues you think for this community?
A little drama. Yeah, that's great. There were two events that happened in the last 2 years that you know, I think everything else revolves around the CAFE initiative to raise the minimum wage and the recall. And I think how the city council responded or will respond in the future to those two events.
One more time, the two events were what?
The CAFE initiative that ended up in raising the minimum wage and the city council's response to that.
Now, did you think that it was appropriate, for example, for Mayor Miyagashima to bring down CAFE and to kind of set the table for that?
To bring down CAFE?
Well, to have the leader of CAFE, you know, who's a partisan in the debate, uh-huh, to bring them in and have them talk.
Bring them in.
You know, have the, it's like they was the official speaker for the debate or for the topic when it was at the city council?
Well, certainly if the topic is their initiative that they have just spent all summer gathering signatures for, of course you're going to bring them in. And to me,
I'm not talking about bringing them in. I'm having a featured, yeah, speaker. I mean, then the Tea Party could put an initiative out there and then they go,
well, of course they could.
What did you think it was appropriate? It's as if the mayor gave them an official blessing at the podium.
Well, I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but the mayor opposed the mayor was one of four votes originally that said, no, we're not going to put this to a vote to the people. We're going to decide it instead. We'll pass it, but wink, wink, nod, nod. We're not going to give you what you want. I mean, that was the mayor's position originally, and then he changed his position. So, you know, that I think is what Kent has to explain. But to me, the larger issue is, should the council have been able to do that? I mean, my reading of the city charter is they had two options once the signatures were verified. They could put it to a vote to the people or they could accept it. I didn't read in there where they say, okay, we'll accept it. And then the next day we'll change it to whatever we wanted it to be. And that needs to be fixed. I mean,
Needs to be fixed. According to you, it's not legal anyway. How do you fix something that's illegal?
Well, what is illegal?
You're saying that when they did that, it was an illegal move, so you don't need
no,
to fix
no,
it.
No, I'm not saying that.
It was clearly within the
oh,
scope
okay.
of the charter.
I thought you said it was outside the charter.
No, no, clearly within the scope. And that's what I'm saying needs
to
be fixed.
All right. Okay, folks, we'll take a little break here and come back. What do you want to get into?
Well, we have to get into Kevin McCarthy. Who's going to be the Speaker of the House?
All right, Kevin McCarthy. He did Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He's ready to move on.
Oh, my sure God. He is. Hillary is not.
Yeah, different Kevin McCarthy. All right, here we go. Kelly, we've got a 732, 733 with Walt Rubel and Massachusetts on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 and 805-610. I'll get to your texts, and we'll be back and dig into national leadership. All right, here with Walt. And okay, so we're talking about the leadership change in the House, and John Boehner was pushed out or he jumped.
Yeah.
And either way, there was a very tense relationship between the House members and their leadership. And a lot of people who considered themselves to be conservatives thought that he was the ultimate sellout because every time he had a chance, he would sell them out. Now, not completely, yeah. But he had a moderate view of what it meant to be in the GOP.
Well, there's no question that by the time he made this decision, he'd been in there a long time and had
5 years, I think.
Yeah, which I guess historically isn't all that long when you look at it. But for this era,
yeah.
And for this caucus, I mean, it seemed like the last two or three he was kind of hanging on, and that there were a lot of people trying to.
Well, they had this guy, this crazy guy, I can't remember where he was from, just decided he was going to challenge him.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out, but that may have been one of the things that led to the seeds of his leaving. But I mean, there's just been a lot of dissatisfaction with him and Mitch McConnell.
So he leaves, and it was assumed that the number two guy, Kevin McCarthy, would naturally move into that position, which is a little surprising to me. I mean, maybe he is a little bit more conservative than Boehner was, but he was part of the leadership group. Yeah,
probably not.
So
he's a very photogenic guy. And when you see pictures, you can almost imagine him being sympathetic and standing up for the conservative cause and everything. But I don't know why he was chosen, but apparently he has a classic case of foot and mouth syndrome. The first thing he said on
Hannity
was, "We set up Hillary in the Benghazi thing, yeah. And look what how she's doing." That just sounded terrible because there's a lot of people on the right who believe that Hillary did something wrong and she's never had to account for it.
Right.
And so all of those people are denied their belief that it's an important.
Well, they are because, I mean, you talk about a bouquet of roses to Hillary. This two people on the left confirms what they have said all along, that we are into what our fifth committee now. We understood what happened after the first committee.
We never found out who said stand down. We never found that out.
Okay, but that's not what this was about. And you know, you're not, if you didn't get that with your first committee, you're probably not going to get it with your fifth. And so at some point, and now you have Democrats say, okay, we're going to start releasing everything because there have been selective leaks. And so if you want to keep going with this committee, here's what we're going to do. We've got the full transcripts here. We're going to start releasing stuff. What do you want to do?
Is it true that there's never been a real accounting for Benghazi, that whatever happened, we still don't really know?
Is that true, in my opinion? No. I thought the first...
What happened?
What happened was that there was an attack on the compound that we were obviously woefully unprepared to defend, and four people lost their lives.
And the claim that there were there was a gunship, one of those big helicopters around the city, and that at one point they had painted a laser spot on where the mortars were coming from, and then they were told to stand down, do not begin to fire. All of that stuff, I've never understood who gave the order to stand down.
And I've never understood that there was an order to
stand down. I mean, I think is the fight. And so if you start with that premise, then yes, there are many unanswered questions, but those on the left and, you know, those who support Hillary's position would say the first report, I want to say it was Admiral Mullen. There were two highly respected military leaders who put out the initial report on this that was fairly critical. I mean, there were clearly mistakes made that resulted in four people being killed. And nobody has ever tried to say that's not the case. But it has been woven into this larger conspiracy that somehow Hillary Clinton wanted Chris Stevens dead.
I never heard that. But
well, how else do you spin that? I mean,
I thought that the spin was that it would be easier to deal with that than whatever tragedy happened than to explain some sort of an attack. We've got a couple calls. This is Kelly. Can I put you on hold? Thank you. Yeah, thanks for calling the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, it's Karen.
Yeah, Karen, briefly.
Real quick, the simple fact that Walt can't say exactly what happened via transcripts or testimony in front of committees or you or any of us is the exact reason why we still don't know what happened in Benghazi.
All right. It's
very simple.
And I think Walt's point is that we don't know and we can't know. I mean, that seems to be there's some level of
there's a level of skepticism that will never be satisfied. And so
I think also that we're not satisfied because everything's not out yet. Do you know that committee that interviewed everybody and then testified before Congress that they never even interviewed Secretary Clinton?
Of course they did. The Benghazi. Well, we're on our fifth committee now. So was there some of those that never interviewed her? Yes, I have no doubt about that. But of course she testified before Congress on this. I mean, was the famous
not the congressional testimony. Well, it's the committee that committee that was set up to interview all the survivors of Benghazi. They never interviewed Clinton.
Well, I thought that was true. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Please turn down your radio.
Yes, I'm pretty lost because I thought this whole thing was about a video.
Which video?
Some type of Islamic video. I thought that's what
okay. So what happens is this comes out, and then there's a claim that the attack was started by a video that was released, and then it turns out later that it didn't have anything to do with the video. That's my understanding.
Right. And the infuriation on the right is that Susan Rice went on all the Sunday talk shows 2 weeks before the election and made that claim.
And that it was a transparent lie that she knew about. That's the claim.
Okay, fine. So what? I watch the Sunday talk shows every day, every Sunday. Every politician who comes on there discussing the tragedy of that week is trying to do one of two things. If they are on the side that was in power when the tragedy happens, they try to spin it in the best way that will minimize it.
It's only politics.
It's only politics.
There's no truth to be found that if it was exposed would be harmful.
If we have done five congressional committees to expose a spin on Meet the Press, that is outrageous.
It's outrageous that it took five committees, or it's outrageous that there would be five committees.
It's outrageous that there would be five committees.
Here is a clip from Hillary Clinton.
There was supposedly protests, and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American
know,
people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
That is one quote that really riled some people up.
Give it, by the way, before Congress, before a congressional committee investigating Benghazi.
Indeed, that's how we got the clip. Here with Walt Rubel. Kelly O'Connell, 745. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and 805-6180. I'll read your text when we come back.
And it shines through each year, and it looks things in different
here with Walt. And Walt, you mentioned off the air the biblical fall of hail in the area.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, we got whacked Saturday afternoon pretty hard. A lot of damage to vehicles. We're still trying to get our arms around any kind of estimates. The official estimates haven't come out on that yet. But anecdotally, we know that a lot of people suffered a lot of dings, a lot of broken windows, a lot of damaged roofs. It came down for almost a half hour, pretty hard. And so some parts of town, Sonoma Ranch Golf Course, the golf course itself got trashed from the hail damage. Golf ball, ironically, golf ball sized hail. And so that's going to cost them tens of thousands of dollars just to get that repairable and playable again. So,
and that was where?
Sonoma Ranch Golf Course.
And what did they suffered damage to what?
To the golf course, to the
wow.
lawn. Yeah. I mean,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Just tore it up.
You know, that's so weird. So I wonder how much damage it caused and how big was the hail?
Golf ball size. That's ironically, golf ball size hail ruining the golf course.
Well, I wonder how much golf ball hail weighs on average.
Enough to put a pretty good ding in the hood of a Suburban, or I think I was a Suburban I was in yesterday. Somebody gave me a lift to El Paso, and front of his car was dinged up pretty good. All the side mirrors and stuff were broken, and not the side mirrors, but skylight stuff was broken.
Did it lead to a conversation about global warming by any chance?
No, it led to a conversation about I wish I put my car in the garage.
That's good. All right. So, in your opinion, what are the most poignant issues that are going to be faced by these mayoral candidates?
Well, I think the future of the city and what that means for both the businesses and for the people at the other end. How do we get that balance right? And what does that mean for things like minimum wage? What does that mean for, social services and police services and all of that? What does it mean to be business friendly? Does that mean turning a blind eye and allowing development in areas unplanned like we had in the past that leads to what we knew are enormous problems in the future? I hope that we draw from a lot of lessons from the last few years, and we have a good debate over what we do want our city to look like. I think everybody supports some level of growth, but how do we sustain that, and what do we want it to look like?
Okay, the economy is anemic here, right?
Well, the economy is not as good as it should be throughout the state, that's for sure. It's booming down in Santa Teresa, and how do we take advantage of that? I don't think we figured that part out yet, but it kind of transportation link, I think.
And what would that link look like?
A bus, I'm guessing. But if there are jobs to be had down there, and there are people here who need jobs, why can't we facilitate that in some way?
Yeah, so that's something the mayor could do, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just saying that those are the things I think that I hope they discuss, that, those are the topics of the debate, the future. How do we preserve our culture while still growing?
Let me ask you a question. You felt like it wasn't quite fair, some of the tax stuff going on around here.
I felt like what the city council did in response to the CAFE initiative wasn't fair. I mean, I thought, like I said, I thought there were two options. You either put it to a vote to the people or you accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And they invented within the laws of the charter. They got some lawyering from Pete Conley.
They lawyered up. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, fair enough. But I think the charter needs to be changed. That's not how I read the spirit of that addition.
All right. Which is important. All right. Take a little break here, and we're going to come back. I'm going to read your text, and then I'm going to get the concluding thoughts and nuggets of wisdom from Walt Rubel, which apparently are strewn everywhere in his fertile mind. And 7:53, Kelly O'Connell Show with Walt Rubel, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180, 805-6180 to text, and we'll be back and get into that.
It's for better or worse.
It's for people who dance for a love that burns brighter right now.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yes, sir. Is Kurt still on?
Who? Yeah, no, Walt.
Walt, yeah.
He's here.
Okay. You know what? Walt, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Walt. From the IRS to Fast and Furious.
We're on the air. What's your name? Your first name?
My name is Johnny.
Folks, we have a caller. Hold on a second. We have a caller, Donnie. Welcome to the show, Donnie. Hope you're well. And I got Walt here. And what's your point?
Hey, Walt. So my question is, from Fast and Furious to IRS to Benghazi, this was supposed to be the most transparent administration in history. And all we're trying to do is hold their feet to the fire. Seems like you have a problem with that.
Because that's not all you're trying to do. Kevin McCarthy said what you were trying to do. And here's the worst part about it. The question was, what have you accomplished? That was the question from Sean Hannity. Okay, you want to be speaker. What have you accomplished? His answer was, we started this commission, and now look at Hillary's poll numbers. That's what he said. I mean, I'm not making that up. That's what he said.
I've got to go. Thanks for the call. Sorry. And we've got I want to get into these texts here. Is Uber in Las Cruces? If not, why not? And that may have been for a previous thing. But here's a 500-page text here. Tell Frankie that Rush. All right. So anyway, too long to read. I'm with you guys. They will have to take my guns from my cold dead hands. Love you, Charlton Heston. Kathy, welcome on board. Thank goodness. Getting worried about Kathy. The Republican debate seemed designed to have the worst brought out in our very best leaders. The real opponent is Hillary or whoever wants to continue Obama's policies. And the Accountability Review Board never interviewed Clinton. And here's the last one. The only reason any of this green energy gets any attention is because of subsidies. Then you have to factor in the added cost when you re-roof your house and have to replace the panels after the warranty is up. But before they are paid for, they are not worth it. All right, we got 1 minute, Walt. I'll leave you with the concluding statement.
It's just going to be interesting to see if we can get a new Speaker of the House. Jason Chaffetz announced Sunday that he was running. He said at the time that McCarthy doesn't have the votes.
Utah.
I think he's right.
Utah.
Utah.
He's a conservative from Utah.
He is. So, it's, you know, he probably doesn't have the votes. Right now, anybody has the votes. It's supposed to be in 3 weeks that they'll have the caucus meeting this week, and then the official vote in 3 weeks. It'll be interesting.
I find it amazing that Kevin McCarthy, in his first statement, was able to just completely trip up his colleagues. I do think that there is a core of people that are very interested in what's happening in Benghazi. It's unfortunate if it's been politicized, but I think we still need to dig down and try to find out exactly what happened that night. Thanks for coming in, Walt.
You bet, as always.
And folks, have a great day. Kelly O'Connell will meet you back in 22 hours. And don't forget to listen to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and all these other great people that are coming on after. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.
And if children had wings, they would sing them the song with a smile on my face and a tear in my eye every time.